Hi, Barbara.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am going to call the meeting of the House Committee on Rules to order for Thursday, March 16th, 2017. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2869 on 2871 and 2872.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2869 authorizes Secretary of State to designate by rule agencies that have data identifying native language of electors and, unless otherwise prohibited by law, require that designated agency provide Secretary of State with native language of voter and that information be included in voter's registration file. House Bill 2871 requires Secretary of State to conduct study to determine most effective method to allow voters to use registration card to request voting materials such as registration forms, ballots, measures and instructions, and voter's pamphlet in language other than English. And House Bill 2872 requires Secretary of State to establish process to allow voters to request voting materials, including registration forms, ballots, measures and instructions for how to cast a ballot and voter's pamphlet in language other than English by filling out registration card or updating registration through online voter registration system.
All right, so I'm gonna call up Emily McClain, Nikki Fisher, and Martha Santo. I can't, sorry. Yes, thank you. It's like, I think that's an A. All right, come on down. Thank you, ladies. Whichever order you would like, but please say your name for the record. Okay.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Emily McClain, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Education Association, representing our over 44,000 members across the state of Oregon. OEA represents over 44,000 members, like I said, and our members are educators working in pre-kindergarten through grade 12 in public schools and community colleges. OEA's membership includes licensed teachers and specialists, classified staff, education support professionals, college faculty, retired educators, and student members. Oregon's demographics in our state have been changing rapidly. Educators across the state are increasingly teaching in schools where a vast amount of different languages are spoken by students and their families. Many Oregon voters do not speak English, or English is not the language that they speak every day at home. Take, for example, information from Portland Public Schools, where they explain that currently the district has over 2,400 students who come from homes where about 60 different languages are spoken. These students represent about 36% of Oregon Public Schools' total enrollment. In Beaverton, it's even more. In the Beaverton School District, their website says that over 93 languages are spoken by the student population. One OEA member that I spoke with recently, Robert Havilla, who works at Centennial High School in Gresham, says that there are over 43 languages in his classrooms, ranging from Burmese, including both Karen and Zomi, Spanish, Russian, Somali, Arabic, Vietnamese, Chinese, Ukrainian, and Nepali are just a few of the languages that are spoken in his classes. In the David Douglas School District, over 70 languages are spoken. When families go to the website of the David Douglas School District, they can actually translate that information into Chinese, Russian, Somali, Spanish, and Vietnamese. This paints a picture of the broad and diverse populations that are living in our state. And educators know the challenge of language barriers as they work with families from across all of these different communities to engage them in the educational process. We support these pieces of legislation that you've opened, all three of them, because they take positive steps in the right direction to engage more Oregonians in the civic process and in our community. We believe that allowing language information to be shared between agencies about individuals' preferred language can be shared and can be a simple solution for us that would go a really long way for Oregonians. Issues on the ballot can be very, very complicated. We all know that. There's many issues that come forward about things ranging in a variety of issues, from tax measures to all of the issues that this group discusses every single day. And we know that if English is not your native language, it can be very challenging to access those issues. So we believe that allowing individual electors to get information in their native language and their preferred language could make the process less intimidating and also more accessible. We currently do not know all the different languages that individuals speak, and allowing for data sharing across agencies could go a really long way to make sure that voters can request materials in their native language and ask the our electoral process through the Secretary of State's office and through multiple agencies that already collect data to share that. I guess I'll just conclude my remarks by saying there was also a task force put forward previously, as I think a lot of folks of this committee are aware of, from House Bill 3506 that established the Task Force on Minority Language Voting Materials. So we think this is another step forward in really making sure that our state is addressing issues of access to the ballot. Thanks.
Chair Williamson, Vice Chair McLean, Rayfield, members of the committee. My name is Nikki Fisher, and I'm the executive director of the Oregon Best Project. We're a youth-led organization that gets young people active and engaged in politics. I'm here in strong support of House Bill 2869, 2871, and 2872. Right now, there is a real need. The Best Project regularly engages with voters who do not speak English and whose native language is not English. We believe voters should be able to access information about the issues that are most important to them and their communities in language that they are most comfortable. Unfortunately, often the only information available about a candidate or a measure is in English or in limited availability Spanish. When we don't know the language a voter speaks before we reach out to them, we aren't able to effectively communicate. Knowing age, address, and other information in the voter file does not do much if there's a language barrier. The task force that Emily cited earlier on minority language voting materials, convened in 2013, took this unique challenge into account when it made its recommendations. The Best Project participated in that process and is happy to see that several recommendations made by the task force are being considered here today. House Bill 2869 would allow the Secretary of State to take language data collected by other agencies and move it into the voter file and make sure it is available like other voter data, so that civic engagement organizations like ours, as well as campaigns, can communicate with voters about important issues. HB 2872 would create a process by which voters could proactively request materials in languages other than English by updating their voter registration online or using the paper form. We believe that these two solutions combined with HB 2871 would go a long way to making our elections more accessible to all Oregonians, regardless of the language that they are most comfortable speaking. We urge your support. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Williamson, and Vice Chair Rayfield and McLean, and members of the committee. My name is Marta Sonato, and I am the Deputy Director for Acción Política Pecunista, often known as PECUN's electoral arm. I am here today in support of House Bill 2869, 2871, and 2872. At Acción Política Pecunista, we are dedicated to achieving a more just and equitable society by motivating and affecting civic participation, especially within the Latinx community. Over the past few years, APP has been heavily involved in elections work, doing voter education, and making sure that our Latinx community comes out to vote. Last year, our team knocked 16,000 doors, primarily in Latino doors in Marion and Polk County. And we had really meaningful conversations with our community about the importance of voting. We held ballot assistance events 2 weeks prior to the election, and we also registered to vote people in community events in our youth and high schools. Many of the people that came through our doors seeking ballot assistance brought their unopened voting materials because they knew that they wouldn't really understand what this material said. I oftentimes think of Don Raul, a Latino man of 70 years old in Woodburn who came to Pecun in his bike when it was pouring rain. He was completely soaked, but that did not matter to him. He wanted to vote. For us, it is extremely important that everyone has equitable access to voting and know that they are making their voices heard. Our community cares about voting and wants to be informed, but we need more tools in order to do this. HB 2829 would allow the Secretary of State to access language information collected by state agencies and include this information in elector registration files. If we know the language that a particular community speaks, this will allow campaigns and groups to better communicate with voters through campaign materials and also possibly change the makeup of their team. We do have data on language, but it is not very accurate. On the other hand, these state agencies that are already collecting language data, which would allow groups and campaigns to better inform all communities about issues and candidates. Lastly, we can increase civic engagement by making sure that everyone is receiving their voting material in the language they feel most comfortable in. At Acción Política Pecunista, we firmly believe that all community members should partake in meaningful participation in the decisions that directly affect their communities. I thank you for considering these important bills as a means to make voting and elections more accessible to all. Thank you.
Questions? Yes, Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The responsibility of the voter, should there be a time frame where if they are an American and they have the privilege of voting, that there should be some time frame in there that they should learn the language in order to be able to vote?
So is your question that there should be a time limit?
Going back to a responsibility of the voter to understand what they are voting on, and in America we have the English language, and should there be a responsibility on the voter's part to know the language so that they can vote in the way that the voter's pamphlet is filled out, and then also the way the ballot is?
Right. So one of the things that, you know, we've heard all across our news outlets and everywhere is that America prides itself in the diversity of languages, right? We're not saying that English is the only language. There's a lot of communities, not only Spanish, but communities, the Chinese community, that speak many different languages. And just because maybe they are hard at work and don't have as much time to be studying English, or they're busy with their family, doesn't mean that they shouldn't have this access to voting, a privilege that they have earned, right, through going through the naturalization process, learning about our Constitution, about America. And so I think that we should make sure that everyone has access to our voting system, through our elections. But I would say that, you know, that's what we were priding ourselves in, that diversity in our communities.
Chair Williamson's Representative Barreto, I used to work in Florida, which is a VRA protected state. On our ballots, we had English, Spanish, and Creole language to make sure that citizens in Florida were able to participate in the elections. We know that our nation has a really great history of folks who speak other languages, and we want to make sure that every eligible Oregonian is able to participate in our election process. And we think that these are three ways to make sure that they have another way to participate. Right now, we feel like there's barriers on different communities, and we want to make sure that we're reducing those barriers in the spirit of Oregon and the spirit of our pioneering state.
And Chair Williamson, Representative Barreto, as I mentioned, in some of the school districts in our state, take Beaverton, for example, over 93 languages are spoken by families there. And I can say from Oregon Education Association members who are ELL teachers, there's no one timeline for any individual. And there's ways to participate in your community, whether or not you speak English. And we have a lot of families who are actively participating in the educational process. Like I said, when they go, for example, to the David Douglas School website, where they can take really significant responsibility for their family's participation in the electoral or the educational process, and their child's participation in the educational process by taking advantage of their translation in Russian and any number of languages. So I would say that there's not a timeline, and every individual in learning a language, whether it's their native language or a language in which they are an immigrant or a refugee in our country, if they become citizens, we should make sure that they have access to voting materials in a language that they can truly access.
Can I have a follow-up? So if you continue to go down this road and not give any incentive for them to learn the language because you do everything in their language, what is their incentive to ever learn the English language? And then what is the cost to the state or to the nation for them not learning that language and continuing to have to do this in so many different languages, especially when we are running into financial issues right now in the state?
So one of the things that I would like to say is that, yes, language is very important. Once again, English is not the official language of Oregon or the U.S. because there's a lot of diversity in languages. Another thing that I want to say, you know, there's this thought or view that our community or communities of color don't care about voting, but we do care about voting. And the clearest example of this is of Don Raul, Mr. Raul, who came in, 70-year-old man, maybe came in when, I don't know how long he's been in the country, like I said, 70-year-old, going in his bike in pouring rain in order to cast his ballot because he knew that he needed assistance in order to understand this already complex document. Even in English, it is complex to understand. I know I say this because, you know, my siblings speak English, but they also ask me, you know, Marta, what do you think about this? Or what is the language here? I'm not quite understanding because it's so technical sometimes, right? So he made this effort in order to go. Our community cares about voting, and we shouldn't be focusing so much on language and whether that person is not learning English, because there are other barriers. It's very intersectional. Like I said, there's many members of our community also spend long days at work. Where are they going to find the time to actually go and, you know, learn English when the well-being of their family is at stake, when they know they have to be earning that paycheck, paying that child's their child's care? It just becomes very difficult, and this is just adding another barrier. So can we make sure that we're allowing our communities to be involved in our civic engagement process?
So I just want to say thank you guys for bringing the bill, and I appreciate the dialogue. That's not what these bills are about, right? I mean, these bills are about that. I mean, it does not matter what language you speak. It does not matter at all. You have the right to have information to exercise, like, the most fundamental right that you have in a democracy. And this is about providing information to people who otherwise right now, I think, as you guys pointed out, are restricted from getting. I mean, there's these artificial barriers that are in place to getting the essential information you need to exercise this right. And so I think it's really cool that you guys are doing this. So thank you.
Pass. Thank you, man.
I'm holding.
Yeah, I've got a question about a part of the bill, because it makes me think when you're trying to provide this information to voters, I think that's a good thing. But I guess I'm concerned a little bit about the privacy of those voters. If you're identifying that elector's name, address, alongside of their native language, and making that information available to the public, and public access to it, which I think is a piece of this bill. I haven't thought through that real long, but I wonder, have you thought about, you know, the possibility that that could jeopardize somebody's privacy or subject them to potential harassment or discrimination if that becomes a public document? Or am I wrong that you're not identifying the actual elector, you're just identifying the language that...
Mm-hmm. Chair Williamson and Representative Holvey, that's a good question. The House Bill 2869, I think, does seek to follow the recommendations that the Task Force on Minority Voting Language Materials set forth, which was that there are many voters that do not access or participate in the electoral process right now because they don't have the language from within their native language that they use and that they're able to read in and participate in. So I think that, at least from our perspective, that we're not worried about a privacy concern because there are Oregonians out there saying that they need these materials and that are proactively identifying their native language to other state agencies that they interact with now. And so we think this would be more of a step forward and a simple solution where people are accessing, when they do access a state agency's services, that this could be easily shared and that no privacy would be taken in the sense that you would really be actually communicating with somebody in a way that they can understand as opposed to communicating with them in a language that they're not fluent in.
Yeah, follow up. And I understand that. I appreciate that. I'm just wondering about making all this information, those files, accessible to the general public as a rule. Is that necessary to actually deliver the ballot in their own language.
I do think that that's why the other two bills for House Bill 2871 and 2872, sorry, Representative Holvey and Chair Williamson, that is why one of them is about electors proactively reaching out and requesting the materials. So I think that's why one of the pieces of legislation is a good solution to that. But I think that's a good question, and I'm not sure if we should look into that more.
Chair McClain.
Thank you. Based on the question from Representative Rayfield in the statements, it begs me to ask that the premise or the underlying assumption of this bill, and I just want to make sure I understand it, is number one, a point that nobody disagrees with, and that a citizen has a right to vote. So that's where you begin with, correct? So nobody disagrees with that, and I don't think any comments have been made even remotely suggesting that. Number two, not everyone speaks English. That's step number two, right? Am I correct? Number three, to exercise that right to vote, the state should pay for ballots and voter information in languages that people choose. Is that basically the three-step logic of your bill?
Chair Williamson and Vice Chair McClain, I think the only way that I would re-articulate the third point is that these three bills together, one of them asks the Secretary of State to take some steps into what are the materials needed, because that's what that task force recommended, that it said, yes, there is a need. There are voters that are not participating because of the language barrier that exists. And so I think that there's a little bit more flexibility to that, in the sense that we are hoping that there will be additional steps taken following the task force's recommendations, and then to consider the proposal of House Bill 2869, which says if there are state agencies that are collecting data on language now, to then share that with the voter file, so that the native language is out there and available for folks to interact with voters in their native and preferred language.
May I follow up? So based on your answer, I didn't hear anything that offered a suggestion that those three steps weren't indeed the basis of the bills, that ultimately every citizen has a right to vote. Number two, not everyone speaks English. Number three, therefore, to fulfill that right to vote, there needs to be state paid for materials in people's language, either language of choice or native language, whatever you phrase it. It's basically that. So I didn't hear anything that made me disagree with that. Now, I heard Representative Barreto ask about cost. I think that's a legitimate question. What I don't think is legitimate is to somehow read something into his question that he disagreed with any of those. Could you agree, or would you agree with me, that it's legitimate and appropriate for the legislature to ask about costs of those materials in our role? Is it okay that we ask about costs?
Chair Williamson, Vice Chair McClain, absolutely. I think it's incumbent upon the legislature to consider all elements of legislation, including what the cost of that legislation might be.
Okay. I think it's very productive then, in conclusion, may I follow up?
Sure.
I think it's very productive for us to then move forward, not ascribing to each other one anything but good motives, and vetting the costs, and making sure that we all fulfill the goals that we have, and it sounds like you have, which are getting people the materials they need to exercise their right to vote. And so it sounds to me like a good idea. And I just want to make sure, by the comment, based upon the comment of Representative Rayfield, and by your comment, that there seemed to be a little bit of notion that don't ask me about the cost, because that sort of indicates a preference towards English, which is repugnant in some view. And I, for one, just want to say, look, if we're going to have a discourse, then let's respect each other's views. and agree to these three steps, which are, we want everyone who has a right to vote. And if there's barriers to voting, I mean legitimate barriers, like I can't read English, I have no one else to help me here, and so can I have this material in my native, then, you know, then the issue is, can we accommodate? And what I'm hearing from you guys is that's exactly what you're saying. And I hope you hear, when you hear a comment by a legislator to say, what about the cost, or should there be a time limit or something, that you respect that as well. That's the question we got to ask. Because unfortunately, that's the world we live in, where there are costs and we need to ask them. Anyway, thank you. I think I got your three steps. And I think that's a very legitimate inquiry to see what the costs are and see if we can accommodate people.
Thank you. Thank you, panel.
Thank you.
Rebecca Gladstone and Steve Elzinga. And I know you two are signed up for one or more of a combination of the bills, so just let us know which bill you're testifying on. Okay. Or which portion of the conversation you want to weigh in on. Thank you very much. Want to start? Want me to start?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, thank you for hearing our testimony. I will try to put these three bills together. I would like to speak to, first I'll speak to 2871. For the record, my name is Rebecca Gladstone. I'm speaking on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Oregon.
Rebecca, can you move the microphone towards you? I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it goes both ways. Sometimes it's too loud.
Yeah, no, it's not too loud today, believe me.
Okay,
not
sorry.
In this room.
But I presume you know that part already.
I'm sorry?
I presume that you know that part already. Rebecca Gladstone, League of Women Voters of Oregon. I'm speaking to you today in my capacity as first vice president in charge of voter services and education, governance advocacy coordinator, and as a league representative on that minority languages voting materials task force. And I included a link to the report in my testimony. And as editor of our league voter resources, which includes all of our voters' guides, including the Spanish voters' guides. The League consistently supports improving access to voting. One of our priority positions this session is protecting democracy by promoting more representative election systems. House Bill 2871 would improve voting access for Oregonians. We value Oregon's legacy of being proactive in anticipating needs of our people, in this case, anticipating growth of our minority populations, both by absolute size and by relative density. Note, these are listed, the actual numbers at that time, were listed by Oregon County in the task force report. We support being prepared before these growing communities achieve the thresholds outlined in Section 203 of the Voting Rights Act and before Oregon would be required to act. We urge support of House Bill 2871, and let me continue. I would like to speak to House Bill 2948 because we also support this one.
We actually are not in a hearing on 2948.
Not yet. I'll come back for that. Okay, so let's go to House
2869, 2871, or 2872?
2872, thank you. My apologies. Okay, so the same preamble. Okay, we believe the following issues should be addressed before a minority language voting materials request process is established. The legislation should distinguish between materials used for voting registration or actual voting versus those used to provide voting information. Considering ballot production alone, our counties produce an estimated 800 discrete ballot versions to serve distinct voting districts. With translation steps added, provision should be made to optimize efficient production and adjust our extremely tight election calendar with improved coordination between our state, county, municipal, and even agency elections officials. Translation standards should be defined. Translations are not mathematical formulas, which by contrast could be strictly correct. Translation certification, which can apply to legal or medical terminology, may have little relation to political jargon used by our populace. It may be vulnerable to partisanship concerns by preferring a regional dialect. We should be sure the communities served with minority language materials are involved in the planning and production. Request processes should be prepared for those needing voting materials in languages other than English concurrently with materials development. We don't see the value of establishing a request process before researching, designing, and estimating costs and magnitude of this large project. Given our $1.8 billion budget shortfall this session, we would not currently support implementation of this larger project. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this legislation.
Just one.
Representative McLean.
I believe after the forecast, the budget shortfall that Governor Brown has called it a budget shortfall, so we'll use her language, is 1.6, not 1.8. Does that change your view as to the larger project?
Chair Williamson, Vice Chair McLean, thank you for the question. We decided that we would stick with the earlier estimate because some of these numbers are fluctuating. My understanding is that this project may proceed, and we are very interested in participating in addressing these concerns. Does that answer your question?
May follow up. There is a point where if the budget was in a better condition, the League of Oregon...
League of Women Voters of Oregon
would be advocating for a public expenditure to try to accommodate, as you said, the bigger project. So, and I assume that's the case. There's some point where the budget impact is secondary to what you feel the need is. Is that a fair statement?
Let me try to answer this fairly. I know that you brought this up earlier, that cost is a concern. I would say that cost is on the table. I would say it may or may not be an overriding concern for us. These are concerns that we address when we produce our voting materials. And I think given the context of having been present and worked on chewed on these things with the Minority Language Voting Materials Task Force, I think these things should be addressed. That's what I'm trying to bring to the table. I can't really speak to the money. Thank you, though.
Good enough. Close enough.
Any other questions? Thank you. All right, Steve, go ahead.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, my name is Steve Elzinga, the Governmental and Legal Affairs Director for Oregon Secretary of State.
I'm sorry. It's just like a lot of noise. It's
yeah,
like low volume.
My apologies.
Today. yell into it.
Okay. Sorry, I'm losing my voice today. Chair Williamson, members of the committee, how's that for volume? Is
better.
That better?
That's
okay.
Better.
My name is Steve Elzinga, and I'm the Governmental and Legal Affairs Director for Secretary of State Dennis Richardson. Secretary Richardson is very supportive of increasing voter access and participation while ensuring election integrity. And in that regards, we are planning to move forward with increasing access for minority language communities with voters' pamphlets and voter registration, regardless of the bills that the legislature puts forward, because we already have that authority. The question of how far we go, though, is up to the legislature in regards to funding. As has been discussed by this committee, translation services are not free. And so we would request that the legislature prioritize voter access in the current budget. And the cost for what we're currently doing, which is we publish a Spanish language abbreviated voters pamphlet that includes federal offices and statewide offices, as well as summaries of the the state portion of ballot measures in the voter's pamphlet. So not all the arguments that are submitted, but just the neutral state summary and cost explanations. That costs us $4,000 per language per election to implement. So if you want to expand minority language voter access for the online voter's pamphlet, which would be the cheapest and best way to start, it's $4,000 per language per election. So it's up to the legislature how far you want us to go by how much money you give us. But we are excited to expand voter access, and we'll go as far as you are able to give us funding to do. And we are looking currently at ways that we can increase access within our existing budget. But that evaluation is ongoing.
Thank you. Questions? Secretary of State's office. All right. Thank you both very much.
Can I ask one question? Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have any ballpark figures on what that cost might be should you get this information? I mean, the last panel said there are up to 94 languages, I think, up in Beaverton, you know, and so if you're going to do this in every language, have you considered just the sheer numbers that we're talking about and what a ballpark cost you would require?
So it's $4,000 per language per election for the abbreviated voter's pamphlet. So it just depends on how much money the legislature gives us. That we would obviously want to start prioritizing the languages based on a variety of factors such as access in the community, number of people speaking that language. The task force on this issue that met several years ago recommended that the next languages after Spanish would be Vietnamese and Chinese, and those are languages we're looking at. We haven't settled on specifics, but it depends on how much funding the legislature chooses to prioritize this issue.
Can you hear this? Chair Williamson, Representative Barreto, thank you for asking. When we talked about this with the Minority Languages Voting Materials Task Force, I was surprised to hear that there were 11 significant languages. I'm floored to hear that there are 93, but there were 11, and several of those did not make the national voting rights threshold for population density or absolute figures in the counties where we discussed them. I was surprised, for instance, you would probably know Spanish first, Chinese, Vietnamese, Russian in Marion County, Somali surprised me, and since then I've met some people from the Somali community. They're significant numbers. I think we don't need to look for perfection. We can take this stepwise as we did with vote by mail.
If I could just add to that real quickly, and just to be clear for the cost of the $4,000 per language per election is for our electronic voters pamphlet translation for federal and statewide offices. We are also running numbers. I don't have them right now, but we're running numbers on what would it cost if we expanded the electronic voters pamphlet to include legislators, senators, representatives, judges. And we're also working on efforts to translate the voter registration, online voter registration portal into multiple languages. That's the cheapest one because you just have to do it one time and then it's available. If for other portions of this bill that were discussed by the previous panel of actually mailing a ballot in a specific language, that would be a significantly higher cost. And again, it depends on what the legislature depends to prioritize with funding.
I have a follow-up. Sure. So if there were three people in this state, you know, that spoke a different language and you had, you know, as you go through your different languages that you would write, that you would have to send out this information in, and there's, say, 100 different languages and three of them are in a certain language, would it be fair to not, you know, just because of cost, not to get the ballots out to those three, or would you just do it to the people that had the majority in those certain languages. So what I'm saying is, as far as equitable, you know, for all people in the state and all voters, would you have to drill this down to every single person that might speak a different language?
Was that discussed in the task force at all, Becca?
I think we looked at the biggest numbers first when we talked about this, but I would like to bring this back to my point that in discussing this and in discussing the Secretary of State's priorities with this, keep in mind that these things are managed through the county clerks and through the municipal elections officials and the agency. The Department of Agriculture has an elections official who monitors and administers some of these things, as well as the state level.
Yeah, Yeah, thank you. But I'm just considering the cost. You know, if we're going to drill down in this thing and hit every single person in Oregon that is a voter, there's going to be a substantial cost. And are we really ready for that?
Chair Williamson and Representative Barreto, I would advocate that when you are looking at making this, writing this, composing this statute, that you look toward progress, not setting yourself up for perfection or failure, and move it so that we can begin to anticipate higher needs in some of these really small communities. There might be a provision written in where you could search for, with the community input, help from them. If you had three people, then you might say, all of these people live in Malheur County, and we could get help from the community on this so that you wouldn't have the $4,000 translation prediction. And then keep in mind my concerns that the translation be overseen in some way to ensure that it doesn't express a partisan bent. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both. With that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2869, 2871, 2872. And I will open, well, are we going to wait for Representative Leininger? Okay. No, we'll do House Bill 2928.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2928 permits registered voter who will be 17 years old on date of primary election, 18 years old on date of general election to join major party and vote in primary election for nomination of major party candidates for the general election, and appropriates general fund money to the Secretary of State to print and count additional primary ballots. There is an emergency clause on the measure. You have a dash one amendment. The dash one amendment permits a registered voter who will be 17 on date of primary and 18 on date of general election to vote in primary if the major party has filed with the Secretary of State certified copy of party rule to allow it to happen.
Thank you, Chair Williamson, members of the committee. Today, we come here to bring you House Bill 2829, which would allow, actually the dash one amendments will allow parties to allow 17-year-olds to vote in primaries if they're going to be 18 by the general election. The bill initially, I'll take a step back. We had a fellowship program that went on for about 13 weeks. A part of that fellowship program, we had about 10 kids participating, high school and college, and there were three different policy groups that were developing policy ideas and competing against each other, and we ended up having an actual mock hearing, and then we chose the policy winner, and this is the policy winner, and it was based on election policy stuff that I enjoy, and so these are three of the fellows that were out of the 10 that helped present this idea, and I absolutely love the idea, which is why we're here today. So I will turn it over to them because they're better to speak about.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, my name is Clark Schimmel. I'm 17, and I'm going to be addressing kind of the reason that we are introducing this bill, because it's addressing some problems. So first and foremost, that is declining voter engagement. Political participation has dropped pretty steadily and pretty dramatically since 1972. In comparison to the other developed countries, we have what is generally seen as very extremely poor voter turnout. That is especially true among young voters. So this data is provided by the Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, or CIRCLE, and it shows voter turnout rates from 1972, which is when the 26th Amendment gave 18-year-olds the right to vote, to 2012. And there's two things I'd like to draw your attention to. First is the general trend downwards in voter turnout among different age groups, but all of the age groups. Secondarily, and probably most importantly, is the gulf, the pretty tremendous gap between turnout rates among youth, that is those voters aged 18 to 29, and turnout of older voters. So the secondary lower two lines represent the turnout rates of young people in that graph. This decline is pretty problematic, especially among youth, because not only are they turning out at lower rates, their rates are declining. And this is creates sort of a vicious cycle where because they aren't voting, youth feel underrepresented, and their lack of representation is disempowering and means they do not vote. So this is a pretty pressing issue.
Chair Williamson and members of the committee, my name is Anne Broussard. Currently, there are 23 states and Washington, D.C. that allow 17-year-olds to participate in either presidential or congressional primaries. We chose Illinois, Maryland, and Ohio for our overview because the data concerning 17-year-old voting was more predominant in those three states. So Illinois was it was implemented in 2014, and it was amended in 2015. 17-year-olds are eligible to vote in congressional and presidential primaries. In Maryland, it was implemented in 2008, and they are eligible to vote in congressional and presidential primaries. And in Ohio, it was implemented in 1981, and the 17-year-olds are only allowed to vote in the presidential primaries.
Chair Williamson and members of the committee, my name is Sierra Alvarez. The first state that we'd like to highlight is Illinois. In 2014, over 7,000 17-year-olds turned out to vote in the midterm elections in Chicago, and the turnout of 17-year-olds exceeded the turnout among 20 to 40-year-olds by 15% that year. And this law was amended in Illinois in 2015. The second state that we'd like to highlight is Maryland. Nearly 13,000 17-year-olds registered to vote in Maryland's 2008 primary. This was significant because 2008 was the very first year that 17-year-old voting was implemented in the state. Lastly, we'd like to highlight Ohio. In 2016, Ohio permitted 17-year-olds to vote in their presidential primaries. 7.6 million Ohioans are registered to vote, including more than 16,000 17-year-olds.
So Sierra's kind of covered how the process is treated in some other states. To address in a little bit more detail how the process would work in here in Oregon, like Representative Rayfield already said, the HB 2928, as initially drafted, mandated that political parties allow eligible 17-year-olds to participate in primary elections. Amendment-1 gives them the ability to allow registered 17-year-olds to vote in party primaries, provided they're otherwise eligible. This is a helpful analog is unaffiliated voters' participation in primaries, how the state doesn't have the right to mandate that, and it's ultimately up to the party's discretion.
One other thing that we would like to highlight is how many Oregonians this could potentially affect. The data in this table was provided by the Oregon Secretary of State's office, and it discusses that there are 6,096 individuals who would have met the criteria of turning 18 either on or before the date of the 2016 general election and would thereby have been eligible under this proposed legislation to participate in the 2016 primary.
So why should Oregon adopt this? Voting is habit forming. So if we start them young, they might, if they vote once, then they're going to come back and vote again. If individuals have been motivated to get to the polls once, they will most likely return. So getting young people to vote early can be a key in raising a new generation of voters.
Also, it's important to highlight that young people are a major subset of the electorate. Currently, 46 million young people ages 18 to 29 are eligible to vote in the United States, as compared to 39 million seniors, for example, who are eligible to vote. Young people ages 18 to 29 also make up 21% of the voting eligible population in the U.S.
That about concludes our presentation. We're really appreciative of the opportunity to testify before you today. Please don't hesitate to ask any questions, and thank you very much.
The one thing they didn't include in their question mark, remember you're supposed to say flattering comments about me, what a great boss I am. But no, and all due respect, I mean, I wasn't sure what type of a policy was going to come out of having these three groups, and I was, you know, really proud of the work they put in in the final product. I think it's a great bill. I'm excited about it, and we would be recommending the Dash 1 amendments.
Great, thank you. Questions? Vice Chair McLean.
Well, very good presentation and great work, and it certainly is. You're making Oregon proud. One question for Representative Rayfield: would the 17-year-olds' information be accessible by the public, as an 18-year-old's information would be on a voter log?
You know, that's a question I'd defer to the Secretary of State's office. That is a good question, and we'd want to look into that. The bill, I think what we would do is, you know, and we can ask them that, this bill would allow the parties to then make that decision, and then I think it would operate under current law whether that is accessible, but I actually just don't know the answer to that question.
And may I follow up? and maybe this is to you or to your colleagues. If it was, and I think it would be accessible if it was treated like other language, would there be any hesitation in advocacy, knowing that there would be what the law considers minors whose information would, like their residence and things like that, would be available to and searchable by the public?
And Chair Williamson, Representative McLean, and I'll let them answer as well. Since this has been implemented in a ton of states, I would probably defer and look at from their experience if we wanted to touch this issue of what has been working in all of these other states. I don't know if this has been a problem in any of the states that you've researched, but I mean, we could easily include, you know, some sort of amendment in here if that was a concern for you to actually make their information private. I would have no objection to doing something like that. But I'll, you guys have done a lot of the research, and maybe you know the answer.
Representative Chair Williamson, Representative McLean, I can say that personally in the course of my research, and I think these guys too, we didn't find anything that came up with that. There might have been debate, but it was certainly internal. I don't think that it was an issue in any of the other states. And many states have had this policy for many years. This isn't necessarily a recent thing.
May I follow up? Can you remind me how many states? I know there was Ohio, Maryland, and Illinois, but
so there's 23 states and Washington, D.C.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, just to conclude again, I think you guys have done a great job, and I really appreciate your effort. I think that may be a concern. It's a concern for me, and would probably be for folks who have 17-year-olds that we're responsible for, also known as children. And, there probably is a workable solution. Maybe one of those other states have done something, but you might check, and then maybe that might be an amendment, or it, I may not be Others may not have that concern, but, you know, I have a 17-year-old daughter who I know would love to participate and hopefully would vote for me.
I was just going to say that.
And I'm not sure if Rob Nose can say the same thing about his 17-year-old daughter.
Oh, we could swap stories.
We have a lot of stories about our 17-year-old daughters. But, but you know, I to be honest, the fact that her, you know, information is searchable by anybody, a little bit of hesitation that we might want to check out.
Mr. Williamson, Representative Mike McLean. It's just another good learning experience to draft another amendment and do some more research for these wonderful fellows.
Fair enough.
Thank you, Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair Williamson. Thank you for all the hard work that you did on this. I just have a couple of questions, and it's probably in here somewhere, and I didn't see it. Are you looking at doing this for congressional races, presidential? Is this election years for presidential races? Is it for everything?
And Chair Williamson, Representative Hack, the way the bill is currently drafted would allow the parties to make that decision. So this just gives the authority to the parties to make the decision. So this actually does not implement it. So depending on what party you're a part of, you know, if you're a major party or a minor party, you then internally discuss that. So.
I have a follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
Have you spent any time talking with the clerks on what this might do for our county clerks?
Yeah, Chair Williamson, Representative Hack, this would be very similar to the way that non-affiliated voters were implemented into Republican primaries in the past, and the way that that was done is with the non-affiliated voters then requested to the clerk for a ballot, and that is the process that would probably ensue if a party chose to go down this road.
One last one. So I'm going to challenge you a little bit. If we have such a low voter turnout of our young people, convince me why 17-year-old voting would change that. If you're not voting at 18, you're not voting at 19, why would you vote at 17?
Discuss the data.
Yeah. Chair Williamson, Representative Hack, our data has found, there's proven research that says the earlier that students are, or individuals are exposed to things that political activity, the stronger that association will be later on. I know anecdotally, like in school, having the support system there, you know, attending government class makes a tremendous difference. I can also say that I'm a 17-year-old that personally wouldn't be eligible to do it regardless, but I had friends that were really frustrated that they couldn't participate in the primary process. They consider that more important than the general election, actually, here in Oregon.
Chair Williamson, Representative Hack, I think it's an education. Like, knowing that you're allowed to do it will get more people involved because they already are allowed to register to vote. And I feel like in Oregon, they're literally just sending it to your house, right? So it would be a lot easier for a 17-year-old if they have it, then they would more than likely they are going to vote. And kind of, if you do it once, you're gonna do it again. And for a primary, you're kind of just selecting who you get to vote for in the general election. So maybe it might feel like more of a choice for them to do. I don't know, what do you think? because I feel like that, but
thank you, Chair. So let me ask you this. So if, you know, I think back to our prom days, okay, you get all excited and you wait so that you can actually go to the junior senior prom.
One of us went to the prom.
And I went as a freshman, but still.
Of course you did.
You stop that. But it's a
no, I did not.
I guess I look at the voting side too, and I think civics and getting kids engaged in school is extremely important. And I think you've raised some really good points in that as well. And it comes, it's twofold. You've got to start the engagement process early so they understand civics and why that's important. But I also think that, and I'd like your opinion on this, that idea that you get excited to wait for something and then all of a sudden you're old enough that you can finally do it, like driving or voting. I'll get rid of the prom idea. I blew that up myself. But so What are your thoughts on that?
Chair Williamson, Representative Hack, I think that you raise a good point about the importance of not only kind of voting maybe being something that young people are kind of excited about. But I believe that, you know, allowing things like this to take place would just keep youth engaged at an even earlier age. And I think just having this happen maybe a few months earlier would keep them engaged longer. It might maybe
that they have a choice.
Yeah.
Rather than just picking with what they have.
Yeah.
Chair, thank you so much. And thank you for your answering all of my questions. I appreciate that very much.
Really quickly, Chair Williamson, Representative Hack, one of the other things is at a younger age is more institutional support around you just naturally to actually encourage you to vote, which then the data shows that once the habit is formed, you're more likely to continue to vote later on down the road.
To follow up.
That's just data. But
I don't know.
To follow up on Representative Rayfield's point there, actually the data shows that 18-year-olds vote at a higher rate than 19 and 20-year-olds because a lot of 18-year-olds are voting at a point where they still have the influence of their parents. They're maybe still living at home, so that behavior can be modeled. And then when they go off to work or go to college, that rate actually drops off. So the earlier that you're hitting, actually, the more support there is.
Clark Schimmel for the win.
All right. Thank you all very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2928. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2948.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2948 allows a person who's at least 16 years old to register to vote.
All right. Yep, come on down, Representative Malmstrom, Representative Leininger.
Okay. Chair Williamson and members of the committee, thank you today for letting me testify. For the record, my name is State Representative Sherry Malmstrom. I represent House District 27, which is in Beaverton and parts of Southwest Portland. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2948 that would let young people get civilly engaged by allowing them to pre-register to vote at the age of 16 years old. Sometimes those of us in elected office forget that we don't just represent people who voted for or against us, but we represent all people that fall within the boundaries of our districts. We make decisions that affect every person, even those that have no direct say in our democracy. Every day in my district, the 16-year-olds are going down to the DMV and applying for permits, passing driving tests, and getting licenses. Oregon's amazing motor voter bill that was implemented in 2016 registered over 270,000 voters last year. Since 2007, 17-year-olds have been allowed to pre-register, and since motor voter was implemented, 17-year-olds could pre-register at the DMV. Expanding the current law to allow 16-year-olds to pre-register fits in with the Automatic Registration Act. When 16-year-olds come to get their licenses, this may be the only time for several years that they might interact at the DMV. We shouldn't let this opportunity of getting young people civilly engaged pass us by. Some of them will be 24 or 25 years old before they come back to the DMV to register to get a new license and renew their licenses. The District of Columbia and 10 states allow 16-year-olds to pre-register. They are California, Colorado, Delaware, Florida, Hawaii, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Utah. So across the country, from Maryland to Utah, states are enabling young people to get a head start on their civic lives. And I say, let's get Oregon on this list. There have been concerns expressed about privacy and accessibility of personal information of minors. I feel these concerns have been addressed, but I'm going to let Representative Leininger expand on this in her testimony. None of us that are elected officials in this room need fear losing the votes of 16-year-olds by not supporting HB 2948. What we should all fear, though, is another generation of young people being further removed from civic life and communities. Letting 16-year-olds pre-register will help them get engaged sooner. Thank you.
Vice Chair Rayfield, Vice Chair McLean, members of the committee, I'm Ann Leininger, and I represent Lake Oswego and Southwest Portland in the Oregon House. Thank you for letting me join you here today. I am also here to speak in support of House Bill 2948, and I come here from the perspective of the parent of two high school age kids. I have a ninth grade daughter and a 12th grade son who is currently 18 but was not old enough to vote in the last election. My kids are smart and they're engaged and they probably hear way more about politics and voting than a lot of people would choose to at any age from being in the same household with me. But they are excited to be members of our civil society and become voters. And I think that the fact of being exposed to the idea of voting, the idea of registering to vote at age 16, pre-registering, at the time when they go in to get their driver's licenses, you know, not only piques the anticipation that Representative Hack was sort of alluding to, because then you have a couple of years where you're seeing yourself as a voter, but you're not yet in a position where you get to exercise that right for the first time, but it turns people's attention to the really exciting fact that they too will be making big decisions, like should our community pass our upcoming school bond, you know, who would you vote for in the presidential primary, what do you think about GMO labeling, whatever the issues are that kids are talking about in their civics classes, whatever the issues are that we as their parents are talking about over the dinner table, I think if our young people have the chance to take a tangible step in the direction of voter registration at age 16, when they go in to try to get their driver's licenses, I think that helps them start focusing on that next stage of civic engagement. As a parent, I am very interested in protecting my kids from misappropriation of their personal information. I care about their privacy, but I am confident that this proposal would be only a good to my kids and would not create a harm to their privacy. And this measure would protect their privacy in the context of legislation we've already passed. Senator Taylor, another parent legislator, sought a legal counsel opinion that I believe she submitted for the record for you from Ledge Counsel dated March 1st, 2017, in which legislative counsel concludes that the identifying information, the addresses, the names of young people who register at a 16-year-old registration, early registration age, would continue to be private up until the point at which they're voters. So, you know, I heard Representative McLean, you noted, and I think Rep. Nose, you were noting too just now, that we as parents do want to make sure that our kids' information is adequately protected. And this legal opinion that I think you have in your file that I have here indicates to me, to my satisfaction, that this proposal would protect that information, that voter registration, that registrant information would not be available to the public for people under age 18. My son is really excited to vote in the May election. I think that's great. I think if all of our kids, once they hit age 16, could be pre-registered and could start getting excited about how they're gonna, you know, share their voice in our democratic process, I think that would be a great thing. So in my role as a state representative, in my role as a parent of two young people, I strongly support House Bill 2948, and I appreciate your attention today.
Chair Williamson, Vice Chair, members of the committee, my name's Nikki Fisher. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Bus Project. We're a youth-led organization that gets young people active and engaged in politics. I'm just gonna tell you a little bit of information about the bill, and I'm happy to answer any specific questions, but like the representative stated, 10 states and the District of Columbia currently have this law on the books. In Louisiana, Utah, and Maryland, this bill was championed by Republicans and it had bipartisan support in every state that it was passed. Last year, we had 19,723 Oregonians get their driver's license. And most of these folks won't have another interaction with a DMV for potentially 8 years. So we feel like this is a really great way to capture those folks' information. If you break down the data by county, and you take away Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington County, 61% of these registrants are outside urban areas. So we feel like we often are able to go into urban schools and register folks through high school registration drives, but we often don't capture rural Oregonians through registration drives. We feel like this is a great way to capture that information, with 61% of those folks being outside metropolitan areas. There's a report in OLIS that folks can look at that showed this impact in Florida increased voter participation and turnout by 4.7% with these new folks. And that was a study that was conducted in 2008. And we also can look at the cost savings of this measure. So we know when we go into high schools and we hand somebody a voter registration card, they often have illegible handwriting or often doing it really quick. Sometimes stuff gets spilled on these cards. And the cost-effective measure of this being able to do it online versus a paper card is 3 cents versus 83 cents. It's also more modern, secure, and efficient. So we know through automatic voter registration that this information allows us to track additional information at a more higher and accurate rate. When Oregon passed pre-registration for 17-year-olds back in 2007, it passed with near unanimous support. And we believe that this is a similar legislation and similar impacts that could have a benefit on Oregon's future. And then I know we have a bunch of high school students here today testifying on behalf of their high schools and students, and we're just really excited that there's so many folks that are deeply concerned about civic engagement and are here to testify in support. So thank you so much for having us.
Vice Chair McLean.
Thank you. based on the first two witnesses, my colleagues, Representative Leininger and Malmstrom, I had the impression that this was going to be a registration at the DMV. I confess I haven't read the bill, and I apologize. You indicated handing out cards at high schools. Does this bill permit the solicitation for registration of 16-year-olds?
So this would both allow us to be able to pre-register folks. So right now, sorry, Chair Williamson, Vice Chair McLean, when we currently go into high schools, we often are presenting to junior or senior classrooms. And so we are often able to register 17 and 8-year-olds, but folks who are 16 at the time are not being captured under our existing registration programs. They often might not have another interaction with another group that does voter registration drives. So we feel like this is an yes, to answer your question, we would be able to pre-register them to vote like the 10 other states in District of Columbia, but it would also incorporate under automatic voter registration and Oregon Motor Voter.
Yeah, follow up. Mm-hmm. So this is not just limited to the DMV, that any group could be soliciting 16-year-olds to register to vote under this law?
Chair Williamson, Vice Chair McLean, yes, we would be joining 10 states in the District of Columbia by allowing this to happen, yes.
I don't think that I didn't ask that, but what I did ask is that anybody could be soliciting a 16-year-old to register to vote under this bill, correct?
Correct.
May I follow up? Okay. In the legal opinion, Representative Leininger, that it's here in the record, could you tell me, is it the opinion of LC that the Secretary of State could have the information on 16 and 17-year-olds, but that just wouldn't make them public, and that's a discretionary choice of the Secretary of State?
You know what, I'm going to thank you so much for your question, Vice Chair McLean. I'm going to let the opinion speak for itself.
Okay. You're not going to tell me what your impression is of the opinion?
I think it sounds like you've got it in front of you, and rather than then read it right here and try to make sure I get the answer right. I'm just going to hope that you could either you have the answer in your mind already, or you can take a look at it and figure out if you feel like it addresses the question that you just posed.
Okay. Can I have a follow-up? Then would your advocacy for the bill change should there be any possibility of the release of information of 16 and 17-year-olds to the public?
You know, I think I would encourage my child to register to vote through the DMV or through a trusted group. I think the bus project would be a trusted group, in my opinion. I think in general, we encourage our kids not to give their identifying information to people who they don't know from random organizations unless they're with a trusted organization or a trusted person. So that's probably what I would counsel my kids.
Okay, may I follow up? So just to make sure I understand, and I appreciate the advice you'd give to your kids, is your, as a state representative, in Representative Malmstrom as well, does your advocacy lessen should there be the possibility that information of 16 and 17-year-olds could be made public?
So I am most interested in supporting the idea of 16-year-olds registering to vote at the DMV. And that's my answer to your question.
Okay, I'm not sure that answers my question, but I appreciate your willingness to give me an answer. Thank you.
Questions? All right, thank you. Oh, do you want to?
Yeah, you could just clarify it. I read through the legal opinion, and so there's actually a subsection, if everybody wants to, and it's ORS 247.16.016, subsection 3. And the way I read it, it's just what the statute says. A person who registers to vote under subsection 1 of this section will be under 18 years of age on the date of the next election held. It goes on, including but not limited to the person, basically the following information, the person's voter registration information, including but not limited to the person's name and any identifying information may not be disclosed to the public as a public record under ORS 192.410 to 192.505. And then the opinion was that no, this wasn't, we believe the answer is no, that this is not disclosable. So that was what was in the LC opinion for the folks on the dais that don't have the opinion. So,
may I retort?
No, I was just reading it. Yeah, I'm just informational.
I think the issue is may not be disclosed as a public record under ORS 192. There could be an issue with whether it's a discretionary issue for the Secretary of State. There can be issues of containing that information and consequences of unintentional disclosure as well as intentional hacks. So, again, part of the challenge of asking questions is the perception, like we've had in a previous bill, that we don't agree with the underlying intent of having participation. If we can ask these questions because there is an assumption as to why we're asking them, then we really don't have functionality in our committee. So let me be clear. We want people to vote. We want people to vote. But simply asking if we can secure 16-year-old information does not imply that we don't want people to vote, but it needs to be asked.
Well, and I hope, Vice Chair McLean, that you feel comfortable asking questions, because I would like this committee to function at a level where ask questions of each other.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the fact that you're concerned about my comfort level asking questions. I've never been uncomfortable asking questions, and I will continue.
<That's good. laughs>
But I think we have sometimes responses from witnesses that are making assumptions as to why we're asking questions. And so when I identified it before, I called it out, and I'm calling it out now.
Thank you. All right. Thank you all. So, Clark. Shmuel? Yeah. McGuire, Grimes? Is that right? Come on down. Sorry. Maya Sieber? Thank you all. Welcome. You can enter any order you would like. Just be sure to say your name for the record. All right. Somebody's got to go.
All right. Chair Williamson and Vice Chair Rayfield and McLean, thank you for allowing me to testify today on HB 2948. My name is McGuire Grimes, and I go to Sprague High School right here in Salem. And I'm here today because I'm concerned about the abysmal rate of voter turnout in people aged 18 through 24. In the recent election, only about 50% of registered voters aged 18 to 24 voted. And out of all people eligible to vote in age 18 to 24, only 59% of them are actually registered to vote. And there are many root causes of the low voter turnout among youth. Feeling our vote doesn't count, a lack of education of other things on the ballot, or even just disinterest in politics. As a member of the youth, I can attest to the fact that although our generation has some of the most passionate people you'll ever meet, there is an amount of political apathy that is worrying. Considering all these barriers, I think registering to vote should not be among them. And if 16-year-olds like myself can pre-register to vote, it will increase our access to the ballot and encourage us to engage in the electoral process. Chair and vice chairs and members of the committee, on behalf of 16-year-olds all around Oregon who would very much like to register to vote, I encourage you to pass HB 2948. Thank you.
I guess I'll be going next. Chair Williamson, Vice Chairs McLean and Rayfield, thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of HB 2948. My name is Maya Sieber, and I am also a student at Sprague High School. I'm a senior, and I'm here as a volunteer with the Oregon Bus Project. As you've obviously heard before, one of the main goals of the bus project is to increase political engagement among young people, and this is an issue that I have become increasingly passionate about over the past few years as I've gone through high school and become more involved in things. Actually, at this year's Youth in Government Conference, which you may know a little bit about, I wrote and co-sponsored a bill that's pretty much identical to the one that was just presented, to allow 17-year-olds to vote in the Oregon primary elections. So I really am an enthusiastic supporter of any legislation that would encourage more young people to make their voice heard in politics. As McGuire said, although the voter turnout for young adults has been increasing slightly in recent years, 18 to 24 is still the least active age bracket in terms of voting. And as a high schooler with a deep interest in politics and a concern for the effects that elections and policy changes will have and do have on myself and my peers as we grow up and learn to navigate our world, it's somewhat disheartening to see such a lack of engagement from the wider scope of my demographic. The simplest solution, in my opinion, to this problem is taking measures like this one and the previous House bill to encourage more young people to vote, and I believe that pre-registering 16-year-olds to vote is an excellent step in this process because it extends to an even younger group of people than we're currently reaching the idea that their opinion matters and they can make a difference by choosing to make their opinion heard. This election season, especially being a senior, a lot of my peers, mainly those who had just turned 18 and were voting in their first election, a lot of people around me were very excited to engage in political activism and discourse. And so by giving younger teens the ability to pre-register to vote and through the Motor Voter Act in such an easy and convenient way, we can increase the ease of voting itself once they are of age to vote and also show them that they really do have a place and a voice in politics. As has been said before, 10 states and D.C., this includes states as populous as California and Florida, have implemented similar policies and have seen significant increases in voter turnout among young people. So to summarize, in a time where politics are becoming increasingly polarized, I believe that giving as many people as possible, especially young people, a platform on which to state their opinion and contribute to change is critically important. And seeing as Oregon already has bills like Vote by Mail, the Motor Voter Act, and allowing 17-year-olds to pre-register, we can continue to help lead the charge on increasing voter turnout and political involvement by allowing 16-year-olds to pre-register to vote. So I strongly encourage support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee. I'm Clark Schimmel again. I'm 17 years old, and I attend Corvallis High School down in Corvallis. And I'm here today to share some personal experiences with registering my classmates to vote. I didn't know that Nikki's testimony would include talking about voter registration, but I was fortunate that it did, because that's what I'm here to talk about. So last fall, a group of students and I got in contact with the Bus Project, which is the Portland-based group that was that Nikki was testifying for. And, sorry. Can I help you, Dan?
I have a personal relationship with Clark, because he's a fellow, so I apologize. I know him. I know him too well. I apologize.
Continue, please.
My apologies, Madam Chair. We ended up implementing a voter registration drive for National Voter Registration Day, which was late September, the 28th, I believe, and ended up being very successful. We pulled in 109 completed voter registration forms, and out of a class, we only targeted seniors because they were the only ones that were guaranteed to be 17. Out of a senior class of 327, that's exactly a third of the total class. And so that it was really like phenomenally successful. But what made it like really awesome is to see how willing to engage our peers were. Like Maya talked about really, really eloquently about how there's a general lack of participation, but my experience taught me that, like, Maya and McGuire and I are not atypical. When given the opportunity, like my classmates, many of which were many of the individuals we were talking to were pretty underprivileged, might not have had parents that could legally vote. Many of them weren't growing up in households where the parents did vote, which is really important to actually building that as a behavior. And a lot of them just didn't know what was going on. It's really not, in my experience, it's really not an apathy among youth. It's just a lack of access. And so this really makes a positive impact on changing that. Thank you.
Any questions?
Right. I got a question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Both of you mentioned the Bus Project, and I'm just vaguely familiar with that. But on the Bus Project, you know, there are different voting blocks, and so Republican, Democrat, Independent, non-affiliated. So, do they give the views on all of those different parties? When you know, like you did a sign up to vote, you know, what, do you just sign up to vote, or is there an explanation on what each party stands for?
Chair Williamson, Representative Barreto?
Yeah.
Sorry. The Bus Project is a nonpartisan organization. They allowed us to do that, and I kind of made an effort. We split into small groups and actually spread out to classrooms, and that was important to me, is that it wouldn't just be here, fill this out, you'll get registered. It was to answer questions and kind of explain about the voting process, because a lot of kids just fundamentally do not understand it. So we went into detail when questioned, but we didn't. We said, this is a party form. You have the option. Ask us if you have any questions. But we didn't go into any kind of specifics about, you know, giving overviews of parties and views. We didn't want to venture into that political realm at all.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. Rebecca Gladstone.
Chair Williamson, can you hear? It's good. Chair Williamson, members of the committee, thank you for hearing our testimony. I would like to circumscribe this a little bit,
out of respect for the time of day and your attention and so forth, many of the points that I would say are in the testimony that's been submitted for the record. I would like to address your question. I would like to just make a few points. We want voter registration to be as efficient, economical, and thorough as possible. We urge your support for this bill. When the 16-year-olds can go to the Department of Motor Vehicles, they can take care of this at the same time. To address, I think, Chair Williamson, Representative McClain's question, they needn't go to the Department of Motor Vehicles in order to register with this bill. Chair Williamson, Representative Barreto, to answer your question, not with respect to the bus project, but with respect to the League of Women Voters of Oregon civics education curriculum, which supports our mock elections program, schools can interpret the way they deliver our information or choose which parts of the menu they want to use when they teach students how to vote. And one of those options that I've seen used that's very popular is that they choose a race within a class and students fulfill different portions of the campaign, or they research the positions of a party or a ballot measure. I've seen students make presentations as the candidate they are representing, showing that candidate's platform. And they do it in it's not nonpartisan. Each candidate is that, each student is that candidate, and they absolutely are partisan, but they show all of the candidates who are running in that race. And so it mirrors many of the actual issues that their communities and their families are experiencing. And we've seen that when they do this, the students are invigorating the discussions within their families and their communities, and we actually do see that voter turnout increases as a result. I would urge your support for this bill because I think it motivates the students to start the process in an informed way, and all the other arguments you've been hearing from the other people who have been testifying.
Right, thank you. Yes.
Clerk, just clarification. Did you say, does the bus project go out every year or just during campaign years? And then you said that the different candidates have their information presented, you know, based on the party? I didn't quite hear you. You speak very quietly.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Chair Williamson, Representative Barreto, I'm so glad you asked. I was representing the mock elections program that the League of Women Voters uses. And we also register students when we do that.
Okay.
It's not the bus project.
Got it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you. With that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2948. Anything else for the committee?
No,
all right. With that, we are adjourned. For the committee?
No,
all right. With that, we are adjourned. 48. Anything else?